We will discuss one verse today. It's a verse on spiritual advancement, progress, development, something which is very much in the minds of devotees, especially when they come together in such exalted meetings where they chant and so on. The question or the subject of going onwards on our spiritual journey to Krishna, to the lotus feet of the Lord, is very much there. So we will try to address this subject from this panel, from this group of devotees. We will all speak on this subject, and we will take like a guideline of 20 minutes each. Of course, we are in the Hare Krishna movement, and there is a flexible concept of time, but it will be around 20 minutes each, and then we will ask for your well-considered questions to further enter this very important subject matter of our development in Krishna consciousness. So we will start with Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. Let us give our full attention. When you feel that the natural tiredness which comes when you stay up all night for chanting and doing other things, that this does not go in the way of your hearing, you can stand up and lean comfortably against the walls. That helps. Running under the water crane helps. Doing some exercises outside of the temple room helps. Opening the windows from time to time help. Please let us give our full attention to this very important subject matter and discussion.
Translation. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here is the remedy for eliminating all inauspicious things within the heart, which are considered to be obstacles in the path of self-realization. The remedy is the association of the Bhagavatas. There are two types of Bhagavatas, namely the book, Bhagavatam, and the devotee, Bhagavata. Both the Bhagavatas are competent remedies, and both of them, or either of them, can be good enough to eliminate the obstacles. A devotee, Bhagavata, is as good as the book, Bhagavata, because the devotee Bhagavata leads his life in terms of the book Bhagavata, and the book Bhagavata is full of information about the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees, who are also Bhagavatas. Bhagavata book and person are identical. The devotee Bhagavata is a direct representative of Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. So by pleasing the devotee Bhagavata, one can receive the benefit of the book Bhagavata. Human reason fails to understand how, by serving the devotee Bhagavata or the book Bhagavata, one gets gradual promotion on the path of devotion. But actually, these are facts explained by Srila Narada Dev, who happens to be a maidservant's son in his previous life. The maidservant was engaged in the menial service of the sages, and thus he also came into contact with them. And simply by associating with them, and accepting the remnants of foodstuff left by the sages, the son of the maidservant got the chance to become the great devotee and personality Sri Narada Dev. These are the miraculous effects of the association of Bhagavatas. And to understand these effects practically, it should be noted that by such sincere association of the Bhagavatas, one is sure to receive transcendental knowledge very easily, and with the result that he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. The more progress is made in devotional service under the guidance of the Bhagavatas, the more one becomes fixed in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The message of the book Bhagavata, therefore, has to be received from the devotee Bhagavata, and the combination of these two Bhagavatas will help the neophyte devotee to make progress on and on.
And Prabhupada gave us, we have the book Bhagavad and the person Bhagavad in one with his purports. So we're very fortunate. And, of course, progress in anything depends on endeavor. Winston Churchill, he gave one speech. Was considered his greatest speech, I guess. He said, never, never, never give up. And that was the whole speech.
Only one sentence?
Yeah, never, 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 never give up. So that's got to be there. Faith, just keep going. And two things. This is one verse that I like very much. Prabhu kahe Vaishnav seva nama sankirtan. Dui kara shigre pabe Shri Krishna charan. Lord Chaitanya answered when devotees ask him. He said, you should always engage yourself in the service of the servants of Krishna and always chant the holy name of Krishna. And if you do these two things, you will very soon attain shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. So this is what we're doing. Chanting the holy name and serving the Vaishnavas. Of course, seva, Vaishnav seva. Seva means in a humble mood that this person is very great and I'm not so great, so if I serve this person I can get some benefit. There's also another kind of mercy or service, daya, meaning, you know, this person is suffering and I'm superior, and we need to do that also. But we need to serve the devotees in that humble state of mind, chanting the holy name also. Trinadapi sunichena, chodorapi sahishnuna, amani na manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Can get some understanding if you walk out the door down here and look at that tree with all the snow piled on it, bending over and frozen. And so the tree, they have to tolerate. So we're supposed to become more tolerant than the tree, because in the material world there's many things that are not pleasing to the mind and senses, but we have to tolerate them for a higher purpose. It's tapasya. I lost that one. Anyway, there's a verse when Lord Shiva saved the universe by drinking the ocean of poison, and then it says that great souls almost always voluntarily accept suffering for the sake of helping others. So that's our business. There has to be some tapasya. To work for the pleasure of the spiritual master, to make progress in spiritual life. It's not just a mechanical thing. It's not like some people, you know, it's not like you just pass one examination and then you move up to the next rank and
or you pay a bribe and then you get promoted, like in some countries, right? If you pay a big enough bribe, you can get a bigger position in the police department or something. But it's by mercy, the mercy of the spiritual master and the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of the devotees, of all devotees. There has to be endeavor to attract the mercy, and we need the mercy of both. Brahmati Bhumiti Kon Bhagyavan Jeev. We're wandering through many, many Brahmandas, taking birth after birth, and we cannot escape our past. Bhishma explained that just like the baby chickens follow their mother around, you've seen that, so the karma will follow us. Also the service we do will follow us. Whatever we do for Krishna, that's never lost. Then Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Latta Beej. By Krishna sees someone is getting, wants him, he's seeking, he's looking for relief or whatever from the pangs of material existence. Or we get some understanding somehow or other, and then he sends a guru. So by the mercy of Krishna, we get the guru, and by the mercy of guru, we get Krishna. And there are different kinds of gurus. All of you here have many Vartma Pradakshina disciples, right? People that you introduce to Krishna. That's one type of guru, the one who first introduces us to Krishna. So many people are, getting introduced to Krishna by meeting book distributors, by seeing Harinam parties. And then there's Shiksha Gurus, we take instruction, and then there's a Diksha, we surrender life to someone who gives us a great mercy of taking the karma and directing us maybe much more personally. But one has to, that's also not a mechanical thing, that we just come to that point, but it's a reciprocation, service. We have to render service, and by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada translated that very nicely for our benefit, by regular attendance in the Srimad Bhagavatam class, right? Well, I remember in Los Angeles one time Srila Prabhupada was leaving to go to Hawaii. So generally he liked to be very, very early to the airport, and but this time he was, they were saying, Prabhupada, he said, I have to go to give class. So he came in and he said, so I'm leaving for Hawaii. And he said, I will be back in a few days. And then he said, I want to tell everyone to attend the Srimad Bhagavatam class every day. And then he said, who will be giving class? And they said, he said, okay, very good. And then he left. And he didn't come back for a long time. And the devotees wrote him and said, Prabhupada, you said you were coming back in a few days. And he said, you have not reckoned with the day of Brahma. But he another time he came in the, when he first came to Los Angeles, so many devotees were there, it was like we didn't know where they came from. Couldn't get in the temple room, outside, everything was packed. And then after a couple of weeks it was kind of down to the regulars. And then so one day he said, you think you don't have love for Krishna. He said, but every day you're coming to the Srimad Bhagavatam class, so that means you have some love for Krishna. He said, I'm saying every day the same thing. I have nothing new ever to say. I'm just saying, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Surrender to Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna. Shri Jagannath Swami Ki Jai. Nisringadeva Bhagavan Ki Jai. So he very much encouraged that. He was always there to give the class. He made sure they were all recorded. So we have that person, Bhagwat. And there's many, we had to make progress, we had to keep our mind on the goal. Have to talk about people who have made progress and study the lives of great devotees who have made great progress. And keep our minds off the, you know, those who fall down, and except maybe to learn, you know, what pitfalls to avoid. By that endeavor, we have to get to mercy, but mercy doesn't just come to someone who is not qualified. Krishna, when he sees someone is surrendering and serving nicely, enthusiastically, and especially if someone is trying to preach and give Krishna to others, then Krishna is very pleased. And Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, they're extremely merciful. And when we serve them, then our chanting becomes freed from offense. That's very important. So if we're chanting without offense, we can make great progress. By serving Panchatattva, by serving Lord Chaitanya, offenses are mitigated. By preaching, Lord Chaitanya is very pleased, and he will give mercy. And we have to take the mercy. Our Vishnujan Swami once asked Srila Prabhupada, why are you giving me more mercy than everyone else? Prabhupada said, I'm giving everyone the same mercy. You're taking it. So we have to open up. That's why we dance like this, you know, and beg Krishna that we can surrender and serve the devotees and see, glorify the devotees and glorify the Srimad Bhagavatam by hearing it attentively and then teaching whatever we realize to others. Everyone is meant to teach, and everyone is meant to, you know, make progress. Krishna wants everyone to come back to him. Spiritual master wants everyone to make progress. And as Prabhupada said, you know, he can kick away any of the obstacles if we just take shelter of the spiritual master properly. And it's not a mechanical process to just take initiation or just chant, you know, 16 rounds, but to chant lovingly and, you know, with devotion, study these books that our great devotees write to tell us, you know, about chanting and about all these other things, hear from devotees and get the mercy. Like Narada Muni, he served very submissively. Even though he was only 5 years old, he didn't have propensity to play or anything. He was serving the great devotees, and then he took their permission and he ate their remnants. And that's a very powerful thing, the prasadam, and then the maha prasadam and the maha maha prasadam, the remnants of great devotees. I might be evidence of that. When I was in Los Angeles, and Srila Prabhupada spent a lot of time there, and somehow my service, I would go to the incense factory early, and then I had to come back to pick up the brahmacharis. So nobody was around. And I just noticed that every day at that time, Srila Prabhupada's servant, that time was Nandakumar, he would come down with the remnants. So I would pretend I had something to do, and I would walk around and wait until he came down, and then I would always get a lot because nobody else was around. And I'm still here. So it has great power. They get the remnants of the pure devotees. Like that Kala Krishna Das, actually here it was Lord Chaitanya's talking to him. He managed to get the remnants of all the Vaishnavas in Bengal. He would sneak around and do all kinds of things to get the, you know, the prasadam. Even devotees would try to avoid letting him find their prasadam. But he would make various arrangements, and Lord Chaitanya was very pleased with that. So Vaishnava Seva Nama Sankirtan, it's a very easy sloka. And Dui Pabe Shigre. Shigre means very quick. If you ever associated with our Sridhar Swami, he used to tell the Indian people, Shubhisha Shigram, when they were hesitating to, you know, become a life member or something. Subhasa means auspicious. So that means if it's auspicious, do it quick. Don't hesitate. You know, so surrender to Krishna. It's not, you know, it's natural to just accept Krishna's authority. Surrender to the spiritual master. Be enthusiastic, you know, to render any kind of service, whatever is asked of us. And then enthusiasm, and then perseverance, and patience. Right? Utsaha nischayat dairat. That's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Those three words. So enthusiasm is first. You have to be enthusiastic. But we see sometimes we're very enthusiastic for something, but then, you know, it gets a little difficult, and then maybe I'll do something else. And then even if we hang in there, patience becomes like a very, very important quality that we see that is difficult in Kali Yuga. Patience and tolerance, in Japanese, the same word, I think, you know, more or less the same thing, actually. But to be patient, we can't expect that, you know, instant prema or bhava, or, you know, we just want to be able to keep serving and be patient and have faith that, you know, the results will come, and they are coming. We may not even perceive it, but if we just keep going, it's like if we're walking on Padyatra or something. Sometimes if you ever went on the Vrindavan Parikrama, in those days when it's 20 or 30 kilometers, you sometimes think you're just not going to make it anywhere. But you just keep walking, and one step, you can't take two steps at a time, then we get there. We keep chanting, keep praying, you know, begging Krishna, you know, that we can give up the false ego, that we can tolerate all these things. We work within the society of devotees, and that is very helpful for developing tolerance and patience, and also, you know, associating with great devotees and learning from them. And how can we have, you know, these wonderful kirtans, you know, by ourselves or something? A little difficult, right? Can chant, but the association of devotees, this is the very, very important, most important thing. But association with devotees means service. It means chanting the holy name. It means, you know, whatever service we have to do, and whatever we can do to serve the devotees. Very quickly, then we'll get the lotus feet of Krishna. And later, when you ask questions, I'll look. I marked one verse, that verse of Lord Shiva, but that's a very important one. The great souls almost always accept voluntary suffering for the sake of others. So just like on the marathon, when it's very, very cold and people see the devotees so sincerely serving there, you know, they're attracted. So we may suffer a little bit. We get frozen fingers, or, you know, we get harassed by the police or whatever. But we get, then that attracts the mercy of Krishna. And we need the mercy. We need the mercy of the devotees. And devotees are very kind. But I looked up mercy. Somebody was asking about it, and I was searching, and almost every reference to mercy was about giving mercy, that I found anyway. You know, we have the mercy already. We have devotional service. We have the holy name. We have Prabhupada's books. So if we want to really absorb that mercy, then give it to others. Give the holy name to as many people as possible, and then Krishna gives it to us. So thank you very much. I've been giving the same class every time for 30 years, so time to hear someone else. Yeah, But it's very nice here. The devotees are, when the devotees are very, just like any time we meet someone who really wants to hear about Krishna, we get very enthused to talk about Krishna. Yeah. You can't talk about someone, Krishna to someone who doesn't want to hear it. So when we have a good, you know, group of very enthusiastic devotees, it helps. And everyone should preach, everyone should speak Srimad Bhagavatam, and do, and this helps us to, you know, enter into it much more. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Hare Krishna. Kavichanda Maharaj, I can assure you that you are charming all of our hearts by your wonderful presentation and also by the wonderful Vaishnava qualities which carry your presentation into our heart. This is very nice. May I just again request, as your humble servant, you need oxygen. I can see it. I can feel it also. Let us open it. Another question is, I would need the blackboard to show something. So I would need two things. Cloth to erase what is on there, and a piece of chalk to write something new. Now, the subject matter of our combined class is progress in Krishna consciousness. Progress describes a forward movement. You leave old things behind, you adopt new things. Progress also means a development. It means advancement in some sort of way. I would like to discuss these concepts from the point of view of a searcher. What you will hear now will be information which is not often discussed. It will challenge you a little bit and your own concept of progress. It will also remind you of accidents which happen on the road. And I hope it will give you tools and understandings in your spiritual advancement as well. Often the concept of progress or advancement in Krishna consciousness is described to be almost a linear thing. It goes higher and higher and higher. There are reasons for this concept. For instance, a verse from Rupa Goswami, which is often discussed in our classes and often explained, but which may not be explained enough always. Ado Shraddha, says the verse, in the beginning, when you start your journey, there is faith. Then comes Sadhu Sangha. Then comes Bhajana Kriya. Then comes Anatta Nivritti, freedom. Oh, it goes on. The advancement happens. You become free of some anatta things which you thought were valuable, but which you have recognized as obstacles and which you can now give up. Then nishta happens, strong faith, unshakable. Oh, this is already quite high on your upward journey. And then comes the higher stages up to prema. I would like to make a graphic. A graphic means some illustration. Hope my legs will go along.
It's not so easy when you don't do so many kirtans and then all of a sudden you do them. Hare Krishna, please bear with me. It's a little unconventional, my lecture, but you are already used to me and have tolerated me. This concept is a little bit like you start here, Shraddha, and you go like this to the higher stages. In a movement which organizes itself in an institutional way, this is very much said, and also this concept, which is right, is very prominent in the minds, and it is very often preached. You will be interested to find that the logo of the German bank is this. It means progress, invest, and it will, your life will go upward. It's a commonly understood paradigm of concept of progress. However, on this journey to heaven, very often something happens which seem to not fit into this model. Where is Bhakta Joe? Oh, I don't know, Prabhu. He had a fall. Where is so-and-so Swami? It's dealt with the GBC and the GBC body. Something is not all right. I have heard in another Gaudiya institution, one leading exponent, he had a serious problem, and for 3/4 of the year, this was not talked about. It was hushed off because where is progress? Where is advancement if it doesn't go in this way? We need a new model. This model doesn't explain everything. Now, if you... This is a useful model, but it does not explain everything, because we are very much interested in truth. We will now see, is there some other understanding in our scriptures about progress than just the onward journey. I think if you study Madhurya Kadambini, where Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur basically talks about this verse from Rupa Goswami, Ado, Shraddha, and so on and so forth, from, how do we say usually the seminars in ISKCON also, from Shraddha to Prema, this. Then, and all these seminars explain this, it seems that there are something like aparadhas, offenses, which are very much there in the life of the progressing devotee and which do something with his line of advancement. It seems we have more like a snake-like line all of a sudden, which still progresses. Something more or less like this. There's some progress, but oops, be careful, there's an anatta, or there's an aparadha, and I'm not such a great drawer. And it goes a little bit like this, huh? We hear in this wonderful work, Madhurya Kadambini, that the setbacks due to aparadhas go up to the stage of bhava. In other words, you can be very high, but you make aparadhas against the holy name, against other devotees, against other living entity, and it throws you back. I feel this is a very, very useful model, which will also explain to us our own experiences in bhakti. Have you sometimes also experienced that you seem to progress in your spiritual life? And all of a sudden, you feel very bad, and you feel doubts, and yes, I know Sadhu Sangha is very important, but it's very strenuous also for my muscles and for my mind, and so on. So this is a model which helps us explain that we do have our ups and downs, and yes, they also have a cause. The cause is aparadas, offenses. Our Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there are four categories of offenses. Nam aparad, seva aparad, Vaishnav aparad, and jiva aparad. I believe everyone here sufficiently has gone to sufficient lectures to translate these. Yes, this is a good model, but like all models, they don't explain everything. Very often, and I will now do something with your mind where I will totally bring you into a new concept. Very often, the devotee experiences that as he or she advances, the same problem appears. For instance, we all know that a big problem in spiritual life is ego. Ego, a big ego, let us analyze it a little, has two concepts. I am an identification. I'm a big devotee, for instance, or on a lower level, I'm a German, or I'm a man, or I'm a woman. Mm-mm. And it has also another aspect, which I have seen is very difficult with devotees to deal with. The concept of mind, this is my idea, my right, my vision, my this. On a little lower level, it's my dhoti, or my car, or my country. Aham mameti. And it is seems that the problems caused by false ego seem to appear again and again. We seem to encounter it regularly. And to not offend any Vaishnava, I will give an example of my life. I do come from a family of influential people, and my family was active in the Second World War, and know some of the leading players of that war. And we have learned from childhood to use a little bit our elbows to get our goals done. It's a certain arrogance and pride which comes genealogically and also by our education and so on. And as a devotee, I know theoretically that ego and somehow getting your ways done is not in line of bhakti, but I can see over the years that it does come up again and again and again. It seems to be like a wall, and wherever I try to go, oops, there it is again. There it is again. You might have made experiences with this in your own lives. For instance, attraction to the opposite gender, the men, to the women. Sometimes it comes up again. It has to be dealt again with. We know as brahmacharis or celibate monks and celibate ladies, brahmacharinis, that yes, one day we feel no need to marry, no need. It is very good. Then oops, we feel. I would like to at this time introduce the spiral concept. Progress. Oh, here I'm really not good in drawing it. It's meant to be an upward spiral. Is it a spiral? No. Is it? That makes you almost upset in the stomach. And always, let us say here, is this attraction which I might have lived in my life before, brahmachari life or celibate life, and it seems to come up again and again and again. And even if I'm already an older devotee, whew, there it is again. I'm not thinking about it, not at all. Yes, Matajis are Matajis, but they, Matajis are extremely interesting. No need, no interest. Here we are now the Mataji. Boys, upper boys, 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 we know them. They are little foolish and all good to stay away from them. And then, oh, you're an extremely interesting boy. Then it might go away, and we may not think. And even if we are high up here, all of a sudden in Sanya's life, we have seen, we have heard about, in Madhva, in the Madhva Sampradaya, where they really make sure that their sannyasis don't fall down by making all kinds of extremely selective procedures, like astrology. Now is to make sure that this embarrassing thing is not happening to the Madhva institution, that the leader is disappearing from the sannyas ashram. But we have heard just 4 years ago, 5 years ago, one of the very big leaders in the Madhva Sampradaya has sneaked out of the ashram door, back door, and married an elderly movie star. Yes, it is coming up again. This spiral model explains to you something which is in our experience, that things or issues or genders come up again. But also this model is like a model which is only explaining certain occurrences and not all. There are others things which happen on the road to progress, on the advancement, and I will not bore you any longer. Boring is not the way, but I will not make it too complicated now. I know of one very interesting other thing. Let me say this one last thing and make it short. It sometimes happens also in the spur to progress that someone makes a lot of advancement. And then it does happen that he seems to go very down, not just a little, like we saw earlier, you know, where one has its up and down, but progresses. But it seems he goes very down. My friend, for instance, gave up hashish when he joined for... It was very good, and many things, really very serious. But then he seemed to go, oh, Krishna, he talk again. Hashish. But then, oh no, this is not good. Then it goes again. And down. There are very serious things which do happen in spiritual life, where it goes really up and down, not just a little. And an example of this might be found in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, where Chitraketu Maharaj, who has advanced to such a level that he had the darshan of Shankarshan, does a very grave, does an offense against Mother Parvati, and she takes it very, very personally, and he is cursed and really enters into the dark night of the soul. He becomes a demon. This does also happen on the way of progress, that someone really goes very down and goes into a very difficult period. He may not become a demon. That's a very, very extreme case. But he is really not knowing anything longer. He's totally confused. He is not aware of anything. It is really as if someone else has taken possession over him. And as you speak with him, he does not think the same way as he used to think. He does not talk the way he used to think. I remember a little while ago, someone who was a very nice devotee took the devotees to court. Yes. And gave, and in the court, she was a lady, talked in such a way about her experiences in bhakti, which you could see it was a different person. There was a real, totally different thing going on. So all these and many more occurrences, well, I should say, someone can even lose bhakti. But in general, all these and many other occurrences are, you could say, explainable in bhakti. It is something which should not... I'm sorry.
No, it's just it's the muscles after the kirtans.
The reason why I wanted to explain this to you is really to say that don't be bewildered or disheartened if your own advancement doesn't just go like an arrow which never comes down, which just goes like and then reaches back to Godhead. In a few years or few years and so on at the end of the life. No, it may go up and down, or you may find other things which were described with the, which were attempted to be described in this model. Don't be bewildered. Don't lose your faith. Don't think what is going on. The process doesn't work. It is very natural in Krishna consciousness, and those of us who have studied or study religious sciences know that it happens in all traditions, not just our Hare Krishna movement alone. Don't be surprised if all of a sudden sannyasi who has had your respect, or a great personality who has been your respect, has confronted these and other things. And don't lose your respect. Understand, this seems to be, this all is happening on the road of progress. It is all what goes on in spiritual development. Of course, when a devotee is in such difficult times, then there are instructions that we should maybe not associate very closely with such a devotee to not become infected. So what helps in spiritual progress when we can expect similar things as were shown on the blackboard. What helps, what gives us a basic basis? My first tip is Prithu Maharaj's prayer in the fourth canto. Prithu Maharaj says, "My dear Lord, please, like a loving father, give to gives sometimes a sweet to his child, or sometimes a bitter. How do we call this? Slap. Yes, my dear Lord, you know what is best to me for me. You please take care of my spiritual life. You sometimes may have to slap me, and sometimes you may have to give me a sweet. You send whatever you think is necessary for my progress." This is a very, very good concept in Krishna consciousness. My dear, oh Krishna, you are a difficult audience because you fight with oxygen, lack of oxygen, but we will help you now. Really, so many people in one room, it's quickly used up. And another thing is, my dear devotees, please go to what we could call the rock of basic faith. There is in a devotee's life a basic understanding which a devotee must build up if he wants to advance and be safe. For instance, Krishna is God. Another pillar. Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee. Dear to Krishna. Another pillar of faith. The Shastras are truthful and are revealed by the Lord. Another pillar of faith. I am eternal. Prabhupada, in his first initiations, would look for these pillars of faith. If someone wanted to be initiated, he would say, "Who is Krishna?" He would say, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead." Very good. Then, "Who are you?" "I'm his servant." I've read this in the Lilamrita. These are basic understandings of faith, and they should be here I will require help again, unmovable or unshakable or it cannot be revoked. In other words, this cannot be taken back. This is a rock. This is something, a rock in the river. It is not moving. Whatever comes to your way. If you don't have yet these spiritual core beliefs, these things where you say, whatever happens, I'm not going to budge away from these. Quickly, as quick as possible, establish in your life these spiritual core beliefs, these essential things which you are made of, so that you can deal with the natural lines and curves and spirals and zigzags of advancement in spiritual life. To end with the last point, which I will now take from Kavichanda Maharaj. I think Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, it was you who said, when you take someone else's thought in material life, it's called plagiarism, plagiat in Deutsch. But if you take it in Krishna consciousness, it's called parampara. Isn't it? You have said a very, very correct observation. So I am now in the Kavichandra Swami Parampara, which goes to Srila Prabhupada. He made this very often. Equip yourself with three mental attitudes on your road to progress. Utsahan, enthusiasm. Nishchayat, that is forbearance. And finally, dharya, that is patience. You said Rupa Goswami. Yes, you might say, but thank you very much for giving such this verse. We have, but how can I be enthusiastic, please? How can I be forbearant? How can I be patient? And this was also given to us by Kavichandra Maharaj. I will express it a little in my own words. Utsahan, you have to know where are the sources of enthusiasm. Did you notice when we are in these wonderful kirtans with so many devotees, how enthusiastic you become? Did you notice? Did you sometimes think, what happened with me? I'm not like this generally. This is a very powerful source of enthusiasm. Even when in the kirtan, in the beginning, you don't feel like dancing, or you want to maintain your shirt in the way in which you started the kirtan, and you don't. One devotee's shirt was ripped yesterday, or you don't want this tons of sweat in your precious sari, and so on. No, it's very important. It's much more important to come to the kirtan and take the crystal clear water of utsahan, of enthusiasm in your system. Nishchayat, how can you be forbearing? Forbearing you can be by a certain strength which you can only get from one source, and that is good sadhana. A devotee who has a good sadhana can be forbearing with the ups and downs. And patience, that is this noble quality, is totally dependent on your shraddha, on your amount of faith. And I would like to add this core of faith, this deep faith, these pillars of faith, these rocks of faith. And the last thing is, which has always been said, Jiva Goswami gives a great explanation about this, faith. He says, first, our faith is in a very general way. Yes, there is a God. Then you hear, he says, from different Shravan gurus. What are Shravan gurus? Shravan means hearing, listening. Here are two powerful Shravan gurus. We have heard from Kavichandra Maharaj. Soon the microphone will wander over to Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. These are Shravan gurus. We learn from them, and we take these subject matters. And then our general faith, which is very broad or very maybe unspecific, becomes more specific. We understand things in detail as it is necessary if you want to advance. Now when the upward progress, you know, which is so much hoped for by everyone, isn't it? Have you not hoped that in 3 years you would be on the top of the ladder, you would be right there? And have you not sometimes been embarrassed by your failings, by your weaknesses? When this happens, don't be so much, be embarrassed, that's useful, and at least it's a sign of a gentleman, but more so, be humble. Understand,
Oh yes, I seem to be an ordinary soul. This is irrevocably, I will learn it a little bit more from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. This is proved now by what I just did and what I just said. I'm an ordinary person. Be humble about it. Don't try to hush it up, cover it up, pretend to be someone you are not. Jiva Goswami says this humility gives rise to true bhakti. It's not bhakti, and I want to close with this, is not so much about achieving austerities, positions, and so on. Bhakti is about love to Krishna. And even a devotee who is not, who has sometimes had a little problem with austerity, or who has left his, who is not in the highest situation in his life, if he is humble about it, then this humility can give rise to very good bhakti and devotion. Therefore, when a devotee has fallen down, let us not all jump up upon him and criticize him. Let us understand, how do you know how often he has prayed to Krishna for forgiveness? How often he has cried to Srila Prabhupada for understanding and so on? He may be very, very good bhakta, a very good devotion is there. So, in this little lecture, I did not mean to, what I wanted to do is give you some understandings to know about progress. Our progress is supposed to happen in bhakti, in love. The ways of love are sometimes moving. The ways, love is an unexpected area in which we enter when we enter the field of bhakti. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Gonitai ki jai, Go Premanandi, Hari Hari Bo.
You're always a hard act to follow. Vanchakalpatrubhyascha kripasindubhyeva cha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. This is very refreshing that we have a little realism introduced into this, because we all know this straight line thing is. It's true, as an ideal perhaps, or as an abstraction, but we all see in our real lives it's the snake or the wave or the spiral or the. The spiky, what did you call it? Zigzag. it goes like that. But of course, what we hope is that if there's ups and downs of one form or another, that the ups are a little higher and the downs are not quite so far down, so that when you average it out, you'll get your straight line. So I think that's what we're given is the average of these things. Well, in actual experience, they're not. Very rarely like that. And I want to talk a little bit more about this. And I think I want to add another dimension to the model, actually. If we look at the verse for today, it particularly in that sequence from Shraddha to Prema.
I have to fix it.
In that sequence from Shraddha to Prema, that this verse is particularly about this anartha nivritti, that that are being destroyed almost to nil, the inauspicious things. These are the anarthas that are obstacles to our progress, and this is telling us how, this is anartha nivritti. And then when they are somewhat destroyed, not completely, because it says praise you, So almost, you know, a lot. Then Naishtiki. Then one is on the, Naishtiki means on the platform of Nishta. And one is fixed. Still there are obstacles, so there's still, you know, ups and downs, but rarely after one comes to this Nishta does fall down in a drastic way. But there's still a struggle, and the struggle goes on like this. And the reason is, I think, is that in the process of purification, first the gross things go away, and we think, oh, I'm making a lot of progress. And then we look, and again, look at that. There's more underneath the surface. They're subtler. They're not so gross. So we work on that, and we make some progress, and they go away. And then there's still more, more subtle. And the thing is that if we're going through this position, it looks in many ways worse. Because in Vedic understanding, we know that subtle things are more powerful than gross things. And gross things are the effects of the subtle causes. So actually, you're getting down to heavier things, even though, objectively, you're making progress. And dealing with those subtle things is... often very, very hard. It looks more immovable, and it's easier to fall into discouragement. On the one hand, you're making progress, but on the other hand, we can become more discouraged. But we have to always, and Prabhupada puts it, we have to practice without consideration of defeat or hopelessness. The steadiness is the steadiness of practice. If we can attain steadiness of practice, so that even if I have terrible, terrible days, you won't see it by looking at my behavior. I'll be steady. And that steadiness, this is the practice of steadiness, is called Abhyasa Yoga. Abhyasa Yoga Yuktena. Chetasa na anyagamina, that we somehow or other we abhyasa means practice. That practice means repetition. Repetition means you do it every day. Other meaning, that's the other meaning of the word nitya, as in nitya bhagavata sevya, as a regular. Prabhupada uses the word regular. The English word regular means according to rule. That's the actual meaning, the root meaning. So regular. And that's abhyasa. You have to practice every day like that. So I want to talk about this particular factor that Maharaj mentioned at the end, which is humility. Because as we advance, humility has to increase. And in this way, the spiritual path is the opposite of the material path. Because in the material world, progress is the path of pride. To become bigger, to become greater, to become more than others. But the devotional path is the path of humility, to become less, to become smaller, to become tinier, to become less significant. I want to illustrate this up here on the board since we're doing graphics. Let me just oops. Oh, there's piece of fell on the chatter. Same leg problem is there. So here we have, I'm going to use the ideal average straight line. But we understand that this is a conceptual graph. So this is, we'll call this objective. Somebody is making progress in Krishna consciousness, right? Now the other side is subjective, and it goes like this. So this is another dimension that maybe from the objective point of view we are becoming more advanced, but from the subjective point of view we are becoming lower and lower and lower and lower, and thinking, I thought I was advanced, but now I know where I really am. So that's another dimension, the interior dimension of spiritual progress. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this humility, because it's an interesting topic. I began to think about this early on when I heard a devotee say to Srila Prabhupada sincerely, Srila Prabhupada, how can I become humble? If you heard the tone of voice, how can I, with all my talents and abilities and good looks, find a way to think myself into this unnatural, artificial position of humility? I'm an American, you know. So we have to understand humility is not an unnatural, artificial. It's just realism. That's all. It's just who we actually are. But we are afraid of realism, and therefore we have developed the armor of a false ego. So I want to discuss this. To make progress, well, let's look at the Shishastika prayer, the second one, which is also another way of looking at this anartha nivritti, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the second of these the prayers is indicating this stage, where Mahaprabhu reflects. Nam namakari bahuda nija sarvashaktis tatarpita niyamita smaranena kalaha etad dishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi duodaiva middisamiha janina anuraga. He says, he's reflecting first, this is your mercy, O Lord, that you have so many names. And the first verse is given all the benedictions that come from chanting. So now you have so many names. All those benedictions are there. Now you have so many names. You've packed them with all your spiritual potencies, and it's not difficult to actually chant your names. Tava kripa Bhagavan, this is your mercy. And then he says, in a real turnaround, Tabakipa Bhagavan, Mamapi Durdaiva Middisamiha Janina Anuraga. But on the other hand, my misfortune is that in spite of all this, I still have no attraction. The attraction for your names does not appear in me. Of course, Mahaprabhu is representing himself as one of us. And that's our problem. We accept all these things, but still, why do I have to sit down and force my mind to think of Krishna? Why do I have to follow so many rules to keep my mind on Krishna? Why do, when I chant my japa, does my mind keep wanting to go away, and I have to ride herd on it like a bunch of sheep, you know, stay there, you know? Why? Why does my mind want to go away from Krishna? And he said, this is my misfortune. He says it quite openly, this is my misfortune. And in the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Mahaprabhu is speaking these verses to Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, it's said that when he recited this verse, he felt, well, first thing he felt was vishada, which means lamentation, grief. His emotion was, he was very sad. When Prabhupada translates this verse in that chapter, he says like this, but my misfortune is that because I commit offenses while chanting, therefore I have no attraction. So we have to. So what we see in this verse is this admission that if I have to even engage in sadhana, in regulative devotional practice, there's something wrong. That I am not spontaneously attracted to Krishna. I should be. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's right here in my mouth, right here on my tongue, so accessible to me in such an easy way, and something is wrong. I'm still not interested. This is my misfortune. And Mahaprabhu felt grief-stricken about this. So he admits it. And this admission is very key. Prabhupada quotes Bhaktisiddhanta says what he is saying, that the most important quality of a Vaishnava is Sharalata, which means, he's translated simplicity, which means no duplicity. In other words, it means a quality of willing to be honest or frank about yourself. That is to say, that whatever faults are there in me, I'm willing to see them and willing to acknowledge them, to myself especially, to others when necessary, but I'm not bristling with defenses. I'm not trying to make a false show. And when that is there, when this element of frankness about myself is there, then we can make progress. If I'm afraid to acknowledge this to myself, if I'm afraid basically to confess, then I go into what psychologists call in denial. And then we see so many bad things happen, because then secretly I'm worried about myself, but I don't want to admit it. So I'm always looking to see that other people are worse. I become a fault finder. I find out that because when there are these anarthas and I'm not dealing with them, I'm not confronting them, I'm not acknowledging even their existence, but still I want to think of myself as an advancing devotee, then this is where these other things happen. I become a fault finder. I find out that because I have some material talent, I can appear like I'm making progress. Because I can give a good class, because I have some academic talent, or because I'm a good salesman, I can distribute books, or because I'm a good musician, I can lead ecstatic kirtans, or because I'm a good fundraiser, I can make money, and everybody, look at all he's done. But I've substituted something else for the real thing. So we have to not let this happen and go into denial, because that's one thing that leads to this, because it looks like I've made advancement. Some of that going up is illusory. It just looks like I've made advancement, but inside it hasn't really happened, because I haven't dealt with this, my own anarthas. So we cannot deal with the anarthas unless we are willing to confront them and suggest that they are here, recognize that they are there. My own experience is that if we chant while trying to give up offenses, and especially try to chant attentively, and we come into contact with at least the outer edge of the holy name, the Namabhasa, not the pure name, that itself will bring us to this beginning of recognition of our faults, because we'll start to feel some attraction to Krishna, and at the same time we'll realize that somehow my mind still wants to go away. What is wrong? And I'll start to feel really bad about that. And it's good to feel bad. Because it's the truth. And I've told people about my own experience here simply because it shows the point that these things happen naturally. One time in my devotional career, I decided really to make a really effort to chant and keep my mind on Krishna and really work hard that when it went away, I would bring it back. And when it went away, I would bring it back. So I was doing like that for some time. And then I noticed that my mind was going away. And not because I was distracted by something else, but I just felt a kind of uncomfortableness, a mental discomfort or distress. And that, therefore, my mind was going away. And I thought, what's wrong, you know, that the holy name is putting me into distress? This is not supposed to happen, you know. Right? And so... Anyway, the way I decided to deal with this, and there was no one I could talk to about this at all. The way I decided to deal with this, I was just going to ignore the distress and put up with it, just endure it and tolerate it, and keep my mind on Krishna. When my attention goes away, bring it back. So I did this maybe for a couple of weeks like that, and the distress increased. And then one day something happened. It got really bad, and then it was like somebody opened a pipe, and what came out was grief, just overwhelming grief and anguish. This I just came flooded with it. And it came out like it was been under pressure, you know. So it was like an oil well gusher, you know, coming out like that. And I was so shocked by this. But I must say, first of all, it was real. Second of all, it felt good in a way. It was pain, but it was a healing pain. Because the other thing that I knew exactly what I was grieving about, and is that I had turned away from Krishna and come to the material world. You know, I was down to the original crime. And that somehow or other, because now I recognize that it was all my doing. Krishna was innocent. If there was a broken relationship between me and Krishna, the fault was all on me and nothing on him. It wasn't his fault, and I had done it. I had turned away from Krishna out of just sheer malicious perversity or something, and just come to this material world and tried to enjoy without him. And I really felt horrible. To me, it appeared to be an unforgivable crime. Now, I couldn't talk to anybody about this in those days in ISKCON because people would have just told me I was a demon. And in fact, it was then my conviction that I was a demon. Because we're supposed to chant and be happy, right? And I thought, gee, our acharyas don't go through this, you know. This is like maybe because now I'm from the West and everything, and our acharyas, they came down from the spiritual world. You know, so I just kept quiet about the whole thing, you know. But I started to go through a lot of changes. And one of the changes was that the second thing that happened after this spontaneous, wasn't ecstasy at all. I mean, it was, but this spontaneous feeling of grief, is the second thing that happened is there was incredible gratitude to Krishna. Because I realized I could not feel this if I had not been chanting the holy name. And though I had turned away from Krishna, Krishna had not turned away from me. And then I really, really appreciated Krishna like I never before had, you know, that he hadn't turned away from me, that the holy name was here, that I was chanting the holy name, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, they had gone to so much trouble just to bring me the holy name who didn't deserve it at all. So this is my own, and this happened without just trying to pay attention, that's all. Because I had not much instruction in those days about chanting. And I said I kept secret about all of this. Then I recognized that these prayers by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Sharanagati prayers, especially the ones called Dainya, he says all these same things. It's actually all there. In these prayers, oh my Lord, I left you, I came to this world, I spent my life uselessly. And I understood what he was talking about. You know, that. Then I thought, wow, it's authorized. maybe I'm not completely so bad a case that I'm off the books, you know. And then 5 years ago when I really started to understand the Shastika prayers and study them, then I realized this is what that second Shastika prayer is about. Huh? And when I read that when Lord Chaitanya felt lamentation, then I understood exactly what this meant. And so in that second Shastika prayer, we see the conditions for making advancement. Because there's two things in there. One is Mama Durdaiva, my misfortune, the acknowledgement of my misfortune, but at the same time, Tava Kripa, your mercy. Tava Kripa, Mama Durdaiva. These two things go together. Because if it weren't for the contact with Krishna, I do not think we could admit our own weakness. We would have to cover up. We would have to maintain a false front. The other thing that trouble people have had with humility in the Hare Krishna movement is that they think that humility is bad for you because it's the same thing as low self-esteem. You know, this is a catchphrase from psychology, right? Like at least in America for many, many years on all the ladies' talk shows, everybody's psychological problem was low self-esteem. They don't think well enough of themselves. But humility is different from low self-esteem. Because low self-esteem is that you think you're worthless, but it's this worthlessness that comes from not feeling you have been loved. I think in childhood, when you do not have the love of parents or sufficient, know that your parents love you, then you have this low self-esteem. But what happens when there's actual low self-esteem, we compensate for it by becoming puffed up. We build this armor of false ego. See, I really am something. You know, this is almost a psychological cliche puffed up exterior means interior, inner feelings of inadequacy. But a devotee can, in this context, we know that we are loved by Krishna. And that keeps us from committing suicide or falling into low self-esteem. Because no matter what I think of myself, I can see that in spite of everything, Krishna's love is there. That I am valued by Krishna. It doesn't make sense why he should, but nevertheless, he is. And I just have to accept that also. So these two things go side by side. The other thing is that it says that when Mahaprabhu chanted this verse, Vishada, lamentation. The other thing is Dainya, which means humility. And then you can see how this leads to the next verse, Trinadapi Suniche Na Torori Vasuhishtuna. Now the humility becomes natural, because I recognize that I'm a fallen soul, that I'm in the material world. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out in his commentary on this, the third verse, that the body of a blade of grass is actually the body that's most fitting and appropriate to a jiva. We have this human body, so we think we're really something. But actually, if you look at the jiva, it's very tiny, right? 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size. Very, very small. Really small. And how many jivas are there? Well, just, you know, countless jivas. So imagine, you know, in the summer you go out to a meadow, how many blades of grass there are. Each blade is little, and there's so many of them. That's about the correct situation. So that's actually the appropriate, it's not artificial at all. It would be the natural situation for a jiva. So then the other thing that happens is that we also discover that when we start to look at our own anarthas and admit them and acknowledge them and pray to Krishna to get rid of them, some natural humility is there. But we discover that when our humility increases, our love of Krishna increases. And this seems to be a rule. As love for Krishna goes up, humility, we can say on the other side, we're going down. We're going down, and our love for Krishna is going up. And just as there's no upper limit of love for Krishna, so there's no lower limit for humility. So in the situation is, that's why you may have attained some degree of humility, but you look down, there's a long way to go. It can become more humble. So this remains part of the progress, and that we see even at the higher stages of advancement, the humility is still there. They're not the other Shishastika prayer where the Krishna's mercy is mentioned, the fifth prayer, Ayi Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram Potitamam Vishume Bhavambudo. Here he's crying. Now he's really distressed because Ayi. Crying to Krishna, I am your patita, I'm your fallen kinkara, your fallen servant, and I'm in this rough ocean. Kripaya, then by your mercy, please take me and consider. It's just simply you. I have nothing to do with it anymore. I'm helpless state, like in an ocean. You know, when you're in a rough ocean and you just. You're at the mercy of the elements. You can paddle all you want, but you're going to die. you rescue me now and could accept me among the little particles of dust that cling to your feet. So again, you can see that this humility does not, it just increases. We should be frank. This ability to just see who we are and look at our own fallen nature, our original sinful desire which took us away from Krishna. We have to see that, but that's very deep. See, that's why as we make progress, we just deal with the deeper manifestations. The false ego, after all, is way down there. Below the mind, below the intelligence, it's deep, and that's the knot ultimately. So we're getting more and more subtle, but we're dealing with something that's more and more powerful. So we recognize the extent and the difficulty and the obstinacy of this false ego, how it doesn't want to go away. To ourselves, we are seeing more and more how we need the Lord's mercy and how we are completely dependent upon Krishna to sever this knot in the heart, or have Nrisingadev come and rip it apart like that. So those are some of my reflections of this other line in the model here of spiritual advancement. To advance in Krishna consciousness means to go down.
Remember that. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
So we thank very much our speakers, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. I must also say I might come in the parampara of Ravindra Swarup Prabhu soon because I have, these were very good answers to this question. So we would now be very glad to see if you have some questions. Let us keep in mind this is our chance where we can sit together, explore this subject matter. It's today we have the Sankirtan course, but we also have this is the last day of the festival, so please let us use this thing to this forum to go deep into the subject and find answers which empower us in our Krishna consciousness. Here's Dayal Nitai we saw, then we saw Govinda in the back, and here's Mataji, there's Param Shreya, yeah. Dayal Goranga, Marius is there, oh, there's a good number of questions. So let us see now. I would encourage our speakers, most of all myself, we will have to be as really going right to the question and yes, and be concise in our answers. Yes. Okay.
Do we have another microphone?
Oh yeah. Let us see. Do we have another microphone? I think this is a question to the devotees who live here on the farm, so that we can meet. Yeah.
Stand up. Come forward. In this verse, it is said that all the impurities are almost destroyed. So, by serving the Bhagavatam and Bhagavata, so what is lacking in the process to that they are destroyed completely? You know, serving Bhagavatam, but they are only almost destroyed, but not completely. What is there to that they are be completely destroyed?
Shall I answer?
Yes.
So this brings to the point where at least practice is irrevocable; it won't go away. But then we continue. By the same, the process continues. But then further purification takes place, and that's where by this, then the next verse describes that passion and ignorance goes away, one becomes established in goodness, then one makes further progress, not by doing something else, but by the same thing. So this is only describing, you know, at first these many purities go away, and then one becomes nishta. And then more than ruchi, asakti, and so on. And as Sachinandan Swami pointed out, you can read in Madhurika Dhammani, there's different anarthas, and they disappear at different rates. And so actually what Vishnu Chakravarti says as far as offenses, he says they're not, he has different degrees of eradication, and the final one is absolute. First complete and then absolute, which I assume means without any possibility of it coming back. An aparad is not absolute, because he gives another step beyond prema, which is the darshan of Krishna. Then it's absolute. So that's why, because these the different anarthas are eradicated at different rates as we go on. Okay. Next, who's next? You're the cook.
Next one we saw Govinda, and afterwards we will have Mangamaya Prabhu. Govinda, please speak loud so that everyone in the room hears you. Yeah. Yes.
You repeat it?
Yes. Yes. So, Govinda Prabhu, I will now summarize your question. Please listen if I got everything which you said. Govinda Prabhu said there was a discussion about pillars of faith which just don't change. Like the core spiritual beliefs which you just, nothing should, is unshakable, it doesn't shake. So he sees, Govinda Prabhu has said, in my case, I see they are not sufficiently strong. So how to strengthen them? Is this correct? This is, I believe, every devotee will in his humility see this, and therefore it's very relevant to all of us. The faith, how to strengthen faith, really. Well, in people go in fitness studios to strengthen their physical strengths. People go to, how is it called, stock markets to strengthen the bank accounts by stock market work or speculation. Devotees go into the society of devotees to strengthen their faith. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a very nice example. When a beggar who's hungry feels, I need to quench my hunger, I need to eat, he will go to the assembly of rich grihastas. Maybe there is a part of the village where rich grihastas live, and he will go back from them that I have this need, please you give me food. So in the same way, a devotee will go to the assembly of devotees, and he will be aware of his need. That's very important. He will not pretend he is not a needy person, but he will go there and sincerely ask them, please explain about Krishna to me. Please explain Krishna consciousness. Like what we do now in this section, we are of our festival. This is a forum where sincere questions about progress are asked, and devotees are answering this. This is nourishment for faith, which is happening, hopefully happening. So this is one answer to develop faith. I would also like to give now another answer coming from a different perspective. When does our faith increase? Well, when something works, then it does increase. I do remember when I was small, I could never imagine to ride a bicycle. I had this four-wheeler bicycle. Do you know a four-wheeler bicycle? You have the two and then two support wheels.
Training wheels,
we call them in America. Yeah. And I remember I would look up to my older brother who had only a two-wheeler bicycle, who had the real bicycle, and I could not really imagine I would be able to drive it. I once tried and fell, so I couldn't imagine. There are many other things. Also in Krishna, I could never imagine to sit before people and deliver a lecture. I heard this is not only my hang up, it's most of the people, or there was an investigation, what are people most afraid of? And the result of this investigation was to speak in public before many others. that is number one phobia. Yes, what people are afraid of. But then we did it. First with two people, one person, and then by making the experience that it's not so bad, you just repeat what you have heard, add a little realization in it, and then you are in the temple, mention prasadam and different preparations so that everyone gets enthusiastic, and then it will fly, it will go. So faith, and this is the point here, comes, Govinda, if you sometimes go into an area which you have not gone to before, and you go there armed with the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, you go in what we could call psychologically a risk zone. You leave your comfort zone, but you are armed with the instructions of Krishna consciousness, and you will see it works. And when you see it works, your faith that I can do it, it is a good thing, works. So two things. Faith is increased by coming into the association of devotees and sincerely taking part in the processes of devotional service together with them. This is very important to come together. Festival is really not so much a relaxation time. Therefore, the term festival is giving one meaning, but it's not really an entertainment time. It is something where we go for nourishment of our faith. And the faith will be further nourished if we take the instructions which we have heard from scripture, from other Vaishnavas, and leave our normal zone, what we do every day, and work with these instructions, and we will see it works, it funktioniert, es klappt, es passt schon, and then our faith is increased. Okay, now is Mangamaya Prabhu, you get the mic.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, and all of you. We heard a lot about danya, humility. And I'm asking, or I'm wondering, what is humility? What is it? Because humility is on one side also a sentiment. So, and we hear also the great souls, like Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. He says, "I'm lower than the worm in the stool," and things like that. Also, he's so much advanced, and it's just like very like this graphic from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. But on the, and then I wonder, is what is humility? Is it a kind or a state of consciousness or a mode of activity? Because sometimes when modus habitus. Because sometimes we see humility, it's also that expression of false humility. There is humility and false humility. So where is the cutting edge where false humility turns into real humility? Is it practiced humility or what is?
Okay, thank you very much. Our Kavichandra Maharaj says, "Okay, I'm ready."
So I just wanted to read this verse. Jagai madai haite muni se papishta purishara kita haite muni se lagishta. I am more sinful than Jagai and Madai and even lower than the worms in the stool. Mora nama shuneye tada punyachai. Mora nama layaye tada papak hai. The one you mentioned, right? Anyone who hears my name loses the results of his pious activity. Anyone who utters my name becomes sinful. Emana nirgrina mora keba kripa kore, eka nityananda vinu jagat bitore, who in this world but Nityananda could show mercy to such an abominable person as me? Preme mata Nityananda kripa avatar uttama adama kichu na kore vichar. Because he is intoxicated by ecstatic love and is an incarnation of mercy, he does not distinguish between the good and the bad. Yage padaye tare koreye nishtar, ataeva nishtarila mohena durachar. He delivers all those who fall down before him, therefore he has delivered such a sinful and fallen person as me. And although I am sinful and most fallen, he has conferred upon me the lotus feet of Rupa Goswami. So, Prabhupada explains other places that the pure devotees, they really feel like this.
This is Krishnadas
Kaviraja. Yeah, Krishnadas Kaviraja saying, and I have no qualification to speak, you know, this Chaitanya Charitamrita, but the deity ordered me to do it. So, Karmis, they say, humility does not mean to think less of yourself, but to think of yourself less. That is quite good, you know. That's what this low self-esteem is. Oh, I'm no good. And Srila Prabhupada once, our Visal Prabhu, if you know him, he is very intimately with Prabhupada and always, you know, very friendly type relationship. And he would always speak out, you know, very openly. So one time he said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, you're not the most anything. So humility really means, I think anyway, to, you know, think, be absorbed in how great is Krishna and how great all the other devotees are, and striving then to, you know, to serve Krishna. But not this, oh, I'm no good, I can't do that. No, I'm too stupid, I can't do that service. No, I'm fallen, I can't do this. That's what you're talking about, false humility. That we, you know, and then we also tend to become very expert at pretending to be humble, you know. Oh, yes, I'm very, you know. But it really means service. One Mataji that was distributing books, and then she asked Prabhupada, you know, how can we be humble? We have to go out and we're aggressive, you know. And then that's when he said it, like a lion on the chase and a lamb at home when you come back to the temple. But when we're preaching, it's actually humble to be, you know, very strong and aggressive and telling people this is very great, you know. But not that I'm very great, but to follow, take the order of the spiritual master and be willing to think, okay, I'm unqualified, I can't do anything, I have no anything, but Krishna can do anything. So if I take the order of the spiritual master, the order of Krishna, and just make an endeavor, then Krishna will, and success or failure is not the consideration, so-called, like, you know, not to just go up and be the biggest book distributor, or the, you know, have as many upadis as possible in ISKCON or something. That's not exactly progress. The most advanced devotee may be someone that, you know, practically no one even knows exists, and, you know, is just steadily doing their service year after year after year, and, you know, really loving Krishna. But so something like that. It's this, you know, like I remember when I was first going on Sankirtan, somebody say to somebody something that we thought was humble. Oh, no, why you say like that? You're great. You should love yourself. You should think you're great. What kind of religion is that to make you think you're low and no good, you know? Because they're promoting this so-called high self-esteem, but that just means, you know, like such a precarious position to be going around thinking, yes, I'm so great, I'm so wonderful because I have, you know, this or that, and accumulations. It's very crazy, but to think, well, Krishna is so great and the spiritual master is so great, or all the devotees are so great, that, you know, I'm just very fortunate to be in their association, and I should just serve, you know, in whatever way that they ask me to. That what I would think would be humility, right? It's a state of mind, it's not activity. Because someone may be, like Prabhupada, he said, he was a servant. He said, but I have to act like the guru. You know, I have to give orders. I have to say, do this, don't do that. Running the whole society and telling everyone how they have to be. But actually, he was so humble in every way. One example was in New York one time, and there was maybe 400 or 500 devotees there to greet Srila Prabhupada, the huge kirtan Jai Prabhupada. And one Mataji was coming with her child in her arms, and Prabhupada stood back and opened the door for her, let her go in. He was totally, beyond this whole, you'd think, everybody's chanting. You can have, there's so many, yeah. Yeah, he's unlimitedly humble in spite of, being in such a position and in spite of lording everything over.
Yeah, this is something I saw myself. It was also in a New York airport. That's why I remember this. Prabhupada was leaving New York, and it was always nice when he left in some way because of fewer devotees and it was more intimate. And so there was a fairly big crowd that followed with him to the airport. And this is before they had all these security arrangements. You could go right up to the gate, with him. And the devotees filled the whole area, the whole passenger waiting area, the boarding area. And Prabhupada was sitting on a seat, and there were devotees sitting next to him and devotees on the floor. And Prabhupada was just very casual and relaxed and joking and talking. And said, people loved it, And devotees were all in the whole boarding area, and there was standing around on the outside. And somehow or other, I was toward the outside too. And I noticed that the gate agent for the airlines there was other passengers who were going to be in the airplane, and they couldn't get in. And the gate agent was, grabbing different devotees, trying to pull them away, and they just put their attention back on Srila Prabhupada, So I saw this, and I said I'll try to do something. When I tried to get anybody to do anything, nobody would move either, So then Rupa Nuga was there, who was my GBC, and so I pointed out to Rupa Nuga that we're causing a disturbance with all this. So then Rupa Nuga tried to get some people to go, and they wouldn't move either. So then he did a thing. I mean, he has what they call in the military command presence. Like somebody says something, everybody listens. So what Rupa Nuga did was he jumped up on the table, one of the little tables. So he's towered over everybody. And he said, all devotees, leave the boarding area right now. And there was just shocked silence. Everybody's looking up, and you can see people are like really offended. And before anybody else can move, Prabhupada was up and getting out. Rupa Nuga said, not you, Srila Prabhupada. And when he got out, Prabhupada looked so meek, just to get out of here. That was a story. Huh? Oh, he just sat down and never put,
You mean I'm not a devotee?
No, no. That's maybe another story. I don't know.
Okay, so who was the next? Dayal Gauranga.
I had already. Maybe somebody else.
Yeah, thank you very much for this opportunity. And I've got something which I find very difficult in my life, because you spoke so much about this enthusiasm. And like when we see what Srila Prabhupada said, the definition is of enthusiasm, to endeavor with intelligence, so to say. And I myself find it very difficult to not identify with the false ego. You know, it's like really my skin, so to say. And it's very rare that I really, you know, get some realization, a glimpse of realization that, okay, actually I'm not this body. And when I really try to purify myself, you know, in the cleaning process, and it becomes more subtle and not so gross, then it really becomes also painful because, and then I come to the limits of the false ego, so to say, you know, and I have to overcome this. So my question would be like, okay, where do I get the strength to really go on fighting, you know, not just giving up and seeking shelter and material energy, but really, you know, strengthen myself. I heard a very nice statement that I read it in a book from Christian Nun, and she said that when somebody says something against you, then just you go on his side, you know. You don't stay on your side. You just, okay, accept it, you know, like this, but it... Phew. So maybe you'd like to give some advice.
May I ask the... So where do I get the strength to not come on the bodily platform? This is the question, as far as I understand. Mm-hmm. To the panel, who of you would feel comfortable to answer this question? Where do I get the strength to not get on the bodily platform? Good. Yes.
I think it's in nectar devotion, but it's dancing in front of the deities will lift one off the bodily platform. Yeah, that's a scientific, you know, chanting and dancing, of course. Chanting the holy name and dancing. That's one thing.
Very, very good advice. I think this is very practical. Dance before the deities chant and dance. And I believe every one of us has this experience, you know. Yes, and you need to clap in the hands. That's very important also. Then the sinful reactions fly away. I really believe, please now do this. We will see a blissful Mataji dancing to come off the physical. And it's a very practical advancement is possible by this. Mm-hmm. Yes. No. Often what Kavichanda Maharaj says, these spiritual things or spiritual states or spiritual upliftment happen by doing something. By doing something. And I do remember now that to become deeper in spiritual life, which I believe is very much what one needs to come off the bodily platform, is possible by hearing, then reflecting what you have heard, think about it, and then by applying what you have done. But Baladev Vidya, this is the usual format how the Upanishads teach a student to learn a subject matter. Hearing, reflecting, and applying. Now Baladev Vidya Bhushana adds a fourth dimension, which we are very, very much trained in also by our Srila Prabhupada. That is, you need to also pray. So, to summarize, if you want to have spiritual strengths, we have heard now from Kavichanda Maharaj, we need to dance in front of the deities for the pleasure for the deities. We need to dance for the pleasure of the deity. Very important not to attract attention on our own selves from other co-dancers. We need to clap in our hands. And if it doesn't work, we need to pray. Please do this. It's very important for me, as the one who passes the microphone to our speakers, I have forgotten. Marius was there and called upon. Then the next person is your good name, Prabhu. Danya. Daniel. Daniel. Oh. And our Martin's name?
Martina.
Dobro. So here is Marius.
We often heard that, or we all the time heard that, to overcome the 10 offenses is simply to be attentive to the holy name. But now, Kavichandra Maharaj, you mentioned that also to serving to the Panchatattva is to also overcome the 10 offenses, or the offense to the holy name. So could you maybe please tell more about this? Or someone, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just mentioned. Of course, the idea of being attentive. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in the Harinam Chintamani that inattentiveness, api pramadaha, is really the breeding ground or the growing soil of all the offenses, and that if we're not trying to become free from this, we will not be able to come free from the other offenses. So also, you may have to make some effort. You know, best thing is to consider that we're committing all of them because we're not seeing Krishna face to face, and try to overcome all of them. It won't hurt if we don't have that offense anyway. But then, as far as the Panchatattva, they help us to overcome offenses while chanting because they're very merciful, and they themselves don't ever consider an offense. We invoke the Panchatattva mantra in kirtan before we chant the Hare Krishna mantra for this purpose. Did you find the quotation?
No.
Okay, you can't find it exactly right. But
preaching is also offenseless. It's stated in that same place. And Prabhupada said his purports are offenseless chanting. Yeah, so if we study his purports, you know, that clears the mind from, you know, puts things in the right place. But we have to make endeavor. In Mahaniti Swami's book, he has the 10 defenses also. It's quite nice. You can study that. But, you know, glorify devotees, that, because the worst offense and the one that we're the most prone to is, besides inattentiveness, is offending devotees. So if we make an effort to serve the devotees and glorify devotees, that will certainly help a lot. And preach the glories of, preaching the glories of the holy name, right, then that will also help to eliminate offenses of interpreting the holy name or thinking it's an exaggeration and all those things. Because when we preach and we see the effect it has on people, when they chant, then, you know, that should give us lots of faith and all those things. Everything we do, if we just do what, you know, and take the order of the spiritual master seriously and go out and preach, that will help us to get relieved of disobeying all those things that are there. And have complete faith, that's the last one. And that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur also stressed as being very, very important. And so Krishna says, without faith, one will never attain him. And so many times to chant with faith, read with faith, do everything with faith, it's going to work. So we have to, you know, meditate on devotees who have faith and are successful. I think it's very simple. But Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya doesn't take offense. So when we serve him, then we can, you know, make progress, or we can practice. But not that we think, okay, I can be as offensive as I want, because I've heard that in one of our temples that's famous. They have Panchatattva deities, and the devotees say, well, you know, it's Panchatattva, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the cook is intoxicated or, you know, don't worry. It's No, but we can practice in our efforts, and we make mistakes and stumbling along. We won't get knocked back, you know, because of that, by the mercy of Panchatattva.
I just noted we are a little late, so we will ask Daniel and Martina to briefly ask the question and then end afterwards.
I wanna ask Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. You said by chanting, we cleaning the consciousness, so we can coming to the root, to the false ego. So like it's a coming down to the root. And on the other hand, it's Sachinanda Swami. You said that it's like a tribal and becoming sometimes every time to the same problem or like border. So how is it if I have every time the same thoughts or the same feelings who are like hindering or which are obstacle. So in that way I cannot come to the false ego, or how is it?
Some unfortunate times, our spiral is not going upwards, but just going around. But if some correct practice is there, it may not just be a circle, but a spiral will go up. So when you come around to the same problem, many times it will be on a different level. When you get down to the false ego, and I say on the gross level, you have to desire, first of all, you have to get rid of certain practices, actual actions. So when you get rid of the actions, then there's the desire to perform those actions, right? So there's the same problem, but now it's just on the subtle level in the mind. And then you get maybe of that particular desire, still there's just this generalized desire to enjoy in this world. that's the same problem, but now it's now you're getting down toward the real false ego, this karmashayan, that's the knot in the heart. So, in this way, although it's the same problem comes around, it will be in different ways or in different, and sometimes, you know, some of our problems turn out to be manifestations of other deeper problems, and those will also come up. We didn't even know we had this problem until we started chanting. Okay?
So we will come to our last question. That was one Martina. Yes.
Sorry for my English, I'm not so good, I try. You said that when a devotee falls deep down, then the other devotees, that they must not in the near from him. But I think it must be very difficult. Very difficult when you so fall down and then Krishna is not by you and with you, and I think that you forget Krishna and the books, and so I think you need the community of the other devotees most than on the other times. So my question is, what can I do? No, so I'm alone when I'm falling down very deep, or...
There is, of course, help for a fallen devotee, and you're entirely correct when you say that when a devotee is fallen, he absolutely requires the help. What I wanted to refer to is an instruction which is given that when a person is very fallen, we might have to be in a distance. We might take a distance, but this does not mean that strong devotees cannot help such a person. See, there are situations, not situations which you most probably think of, but there are situations when the person develops a very, very strong materialistic phase in his life. And he tries to convince everyone to join his philosophy. At such a time, it is to be asked who can help, who is competent to help. Many devotees may not be competent, and they wish that devotee well, but from a distance. There is a time when someone, for instance, is very offensive and talks impossible things, and if you would come close to him, that would hurt your spiritual creeper as well. It doesn't mean when a good-hearted soul like you has difficulties that everyone leaves you alone. No. Yes. So thank you all very, very, very much for asking good questions. And more than anything, our speakers have done a very nice service to the Vaishnava community. We will end here, but before you leave, it's maybe good to know how the program continues. What is obviously the next thing might be Prasadam, but I see he is the qualified man. Mangal Prabhu will guide us and give us an orientation for the rest of the day, if possible. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much.